You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
In today's episode of the Real Estate Investing Podcast, we dig into the world of bird dogs. What are they, how they work, and whether you need one to find off-market deals in Montreal's ultra-competitive real estate market. Are they legit or investor folklore? Are they legit or investor folklore? What should you watch out for? And how do you build relationships that actually bring you deals? Tune in to learn what works and what doesn't in the hunt for undervalued properties.
Welcome to the Real Escape Investing Podcast, where we guide you to escape the constraints of time, geography, and finance through real estate. And now, here's your host, Terry Schauer.
Hey, real estate fans, I have exciting news to share with you. Our monthly in-person networking events are back. If you're in the Montreal area, and even if you're not, go ahead and grab a ticket for our next event at equitybuildersclub.com/events. I would love to see you out. Hey, real estate fan. So this week, we're continuing with our theme of how to find deals in an ultra-competitive investor market. And the topic that we're going to dive into today is this question of bird dogs. And not so long ago in my own investing life, I had no idea what a bird dog was. And I was actually a little bit embarrassed to ask the other investors around me what that term meant. And so this episode is going to, first of all, just explain to you what a bird dog is, and then give you a little bit of insight into how they operate in the market and how to use them or not use them, and just basically understand what they do. So a bird dog is basically kind of a connector, or somebody who is active in the market, knows of off-market deals, and who is able to bring you the investor deals that you might be interested in. And so, like, that's colloquially what we just call a bird dog. And now, typically, the way that these people are paid, the way that they pay themselves, is they will take a percentage of the transaction size that they bring you. And so typically, you know, somewhere from 1-2% of a deal when they bring you one, they expect to be paid on closing. And so now maybe the first thing that we can just dive into is, how is this really like a legit thing? Because if you're a newer investor, and even if you've been at this for a while, you will be familiar with the fact that there are real estate brokers who work through Centris. And then there are some real estate brokers who have off markets. And so there's what's called the Real Estate Brokerage Act, which means that to do real estate buying and selling brokering activities, you're supposed to have a real estate license. And so the truth about bird dogs is that typically they're people who are, you know, connected and who have made it their business to build this network of different people, but they usually don't have real estate licenses. And so the first thing to understand is that this like connector, so to say, is not a wholesaler. So they're not going to be typically going out and getting properties under contract. So a wholesaler might be someone who has like a prospecting engine, and they're out there, you know, farming the market and getting deals under contract. And then they will be wholesaling those deals to perhaps you, the investor, or, you know, somehow in the market. And then they will be either taking a fee or else keeping the difference. So I'll just give you a really simple example that I came across a while ago, where a wholesaler had gotten a sixplex under contract for $900,000. And this person then somehow found me, was connected to me, and they wanted me to purchase the deal for just over $1 million. And so what was effectively going to happen is that the wholesaler was going to keep the $100,000 spread between the price at which I was willing to purchase the deal and the price at which the seller was willing to sell their building. And so that, in a nutshell, is kind of how in the investor space in Montreal, wholesalers work. And so what they're going to typically approach you with is a promise to purchase that has already been signed by a seller that has certain conditions that are going to allow you to do your due diligence and put your financing in place, and then eventually close, leaving them with that spread. So in a sense, wholesaling is like a bit of on the side of real estate brokering. Like, it doesn't really interfere with brokering because the person like actually has the property under contract. And so that's the way in which like wholesalers operate. Now, in the previous episode, we talked a little bit about real estate brokers who have pocket listings. The real estate broker will have signed usually with their client a brokerage contract that allows them to shop that deal around. And then when they have that property like with under contract with a listing on the listing side, they then will have a time window, which for whatever reason, the property owner or the seller will allow them to have like exclusively to sell it off market. Now, one of the other ways that off-market pocket listing brokers work is that they might know that a seller is trying to liquidate an asset, but isn't quite yet ready to list it on the open market with a listing broker. And so then what will happen is that that pocket listing broker will work with you as the buyer and will bring that seller a promise to purchase. And so actually the contractual relationship is between you as the buyer and really, and the broker. And then the broker's just bringing that client or that seller a promise to purchase that you're signing as the buyer. And like typically what's going to happen in this case is that you as the buyer are the one who's going to end up paying that 2% or 3% or 1.5% brokerage fee, right? So there's really two ways in which you can come across a pocket listing that a broker has. One is they are representing the seller, and that seller, for whatever reason, didn't want the property to hit the open market or allow the broker to shop it around privately before listing it openly. So the broker can be on the seller side, or else the broker can be on the buyer's side where they are presenting a promise to purchase coming from you, the buyer, to a seller who does not have their property under contract listed with a listing broker. So those are kind of like the other actors that can bring you what we refer to as off-market deals. Now, the bird dog is neither one of these other animals. And so bird dogs like either will be, you know, prospectors who are out there coming across more deals than they can deal with. But usually on the other side of the bird dog is either a wholesaler or a real estate broker with a pocket listing. And so every bird dog that like I've ever dealt with has relationships with real estate brokers who have off-market deals either under contract or who have relationships with sellers who are not yet willing to list their properties, or they have relationships with wholesalers. And then what the bird dog is doing is that hopefully because that property is a margin more interesting of what you would find on the open market, they're able to then insert their 2% fee into the transaction. And just be clear as far as the scope of what the bird dog does, like really all they're doing is they're just a middleman. So they won't offer any services. They're not helping you put together the contracts. They are not representing the buyer. They're not representing the seller. They're just really connecting you with either the wholesaler, the direct seller, or the broker who has a pocket listing, and they're acting as the middleman. And for that, they're taking a, you know, usually somewhere around a 2% fee. Now, you can sometimes negotiate that lower, but that's kind of the industry standard. And then how does that work? So like typically you're going to end up paying your bird dog when you go to the notary, and they will produce a bill for you, which is usually, you know, some kind of consulting service or like some kind of thing. And then you just cut them a check at the same time as you go to the notary. But now you need to be aware that because this is not really something that is allowed by the Real Estate Brokerage Act, there you can deduct the bill from your taxes as some kind of a consulting fee, but it's not something that you can finance. So for example, like brokerage fees, whether you're paying them through the seller or whether you as the buyer are paying them directly to the broker, that's something that you can integrate into the sales price and then have financed as part of your financing when you do a deal. Bird dog fees, unfortunately, are coming out of pocket because they're not like legitimate fees that can be integrated into a real estate transaction because they're not really, you know, working according to the Brokerage Act. Now, I've not really seen, you know, the OSIC, which is the body that regulates brokerage transactions. I have not seen them come down on any bird dogs. And it's also because, you know, the bird dog, like it's kind of a don't ask, don't tell position in the real estate industry, because since they're not actually really involved in the transaction, like all they're doing is putting you in touch with someone who has has a pocket listing or who wants to sell their buildings. They're not involving their professional responsibility in any way. And anyway, they don't really have a professional role that can see the light of day. And so they're not people who are usually, you know, getting sued or who are exposing themselves in a transaction the same way that a real estate broker or a seller might do, right? Because the seller will be governed by whatever the laws are on real estate transacting. And then real estate brokers have their own code of ethics and their own body that like kind of regulates the activities that they have and how they're supposed to serve you as a client. But like bird dogging is completely unregulated because actually like it's kind of on the edge of what would be considered an illegal brokerage action. And so really like you're kind of in the Wild West when you're dealing with people like this. Now, how can I, you know, frame this for you to understand that despite the fact that this is like definitely gray zone real estate land, like why might you want to work with a bird dog? And so the fact is that some of these actors, like they make it their life to network with different real estate actors, right? So they can be networking with sellers, with real estate brokers, with different wholesalers. And then they might have relationships with multiple investors where they will be keeping their eyes open for your specific buy box. And so there have been times in my career where I've worked with bird dogs and like the conversation that to start out with typically goes like this. It goes like, okay, Terry, like what kind of buildings are you looking for? What's your favorite asset class? What kind of geographic areas are you looking at? Give me a budget type. And then they walk away with that and, you know, go and sort of see if they have any connections that work in that area. And then the other thing is that, well, we don't sign a contract or anything because like technically they don't want to put anything in writing. Like it's not really a legitimate role in the real estate sphere, let's say. And so the conversation goes something like, well, look, like I have big ears and I'm happy to work with you. But if you, you know, don't treat me fairly once, if you cut me out of the commission once, you'll never hear from me again. So just be aware that you don't want to poison the well. And so, you know, you're supposed to cut those people a check out of the fact that that's like a legitimate business relationship, but it's not something that's contractually enforceable, like not on one way or the other, because the bird dog like doesn't have a contract with you because ultimately like what they're doing is not really a kind of a legitimate role in the real estate field. So as long as you're aware of that, and, you know, again, to say that like these relationships, like you might be able to pull a fast one on someone once, because how is the bird dog going to enforce the fact that you have to pay them? They don't actually really have a legitimate existence. But then again, do you really want to be, you know, treating people unfairly and then having that source of deals drying up and like not compensating that person for their work? So, you know, that's kind of the preamble of like how you would work with them. Now, I have not seen bird dog deals that beat the open market by a wide margin. And, you know, you also have to think about how markets are operating, because in a situation where there is not a lot of listings, not a lot of stuff that looks like it makes sense, and capital is easy, right? Like at the height of COVID, this is kind of the way the situation was. Like in that case, buyers might be inclined to work with bird dogs just because it's really difficult to get offers on the open market. And then the other problem is just the competitiveness. So even if on Centris, you know, the listing price might be similar as to the price that the bird dog will bring you, the difference is that when you're working with these off-market actors, you're working with a bird dog, typically it's not going to be multiple offer situation, and you're going to be able to have a short time window in which you can talk directly to the seller. So even though on a price perspective, there's probably not a whole lot of edge to be had on working with a bird dog, just to be able to transact alone and not have 10 other people putting pressure on you, I mean, that does have a value. Now, what I said in last week's episode about, you know, off-market deals typically being like more complex and distasteful than on-market deals with generally a lower level of professionalism, that is 100% true when you're working with bird dogs, because you have to think about like, who are the people on the other end of that? If I'm sitting here in the buyer's seat and I'm looking to find properties, like the most sort of professional seller is going to be, or the one who wants to do a deal in like the most streamlined, legitimate way, is going to be listing with a broker and putting it on Centris. So if a bird dog is somehow connecting me with a pocket listing broker or a wholesaler or a direct seller, like there's going to be reasons why those actors have been able to get that property under contract. And then the seller who's behind it is probably going to be a more complicated animal than somebody who I would be transacting with on Centris. So I will say that deals that I have done or attempted to do with bird dogs, because I will say that like my close percentage of deals that I have looked at with bird dogs and that I have tried to do with bird dogs, like the close rate on those is like way, way lower than what I would find on Centris. And so I would also say that like, you know, if you're trying to evaluate the opportunity cost, like, can you do a deal in this way? Can you do a deal where you might get to transact at a bit of a lower cost? And in a less competitive environment, yes, you can. Now, is there going to be an opportunity cost of some of the hoops you have to jump through and some of the frogs you have to kiss in terms of deals that don't work out? Absolutely, there is. And, you know, I can just give you a couple of examples like, of deals that, you know, bird dogs have brought to me, and you will then kind of understand what I'm talking about. So, you know, I was working with one particular person who really brought me a lot of deals. He was like super active. Now, not all of them were great. Most of the time I would just look at them, you know, in the form of an email and be like, okay, pass. And then all of a sudden I would get interested in one. And so I was, you know, getting ready to actually make an offer on one of those deals that he brought me. And then I discovered that on the other end of this deal was like a broker who supposedly had a pocket listing. And so then I got the broker on the phone. And what occurs to me over the course of the conversation is like, this broker does not have that asset under contract. So there's no pocket listing. Like, this thing was pitched to me as a pocket listing. But what it actually is there's a broker on the other end of this who either was looking at expired listings, or maybe who talked to a specific seller like 2 years ago, because I then discovered as I was getting ready to put together my offer that the rent roll was like 2 years out of date. And so then, you know, I asked the listing broker, because this is what happens, right? Or not the listing broker, the intermediary broker. Because what happens is, okay, the bird dog like sends me a one pager with a rent roll and a price and says, okay, here's this pocket listing. If you want more information, sign this NDA and I'll put you in touch with the broker. So, okay, so sign the NDA, get the information, get the broker on the phone. And then it like occurs to me that like the broker, the reason why their rent roll is 2 years out of date is because they haven't even like begun a conversation with the seller yet. And so their motivation is simply to have me put together a promise to purchase where, of course, I'm the one paying the broker's fees and I'm the one paying the bird dog. And they're then going to be hopefully take this promise to purchase to a seller who like has no real relationship with the broker whatsoever. And so like, you know, when I discovered this was going on, I'm like, look, you know, like this is just really like not very serious. Like when you've talked to the seller and you know that their intention is actually to sell and you have some updated rent roll and financial information on the building, like then I can actually put together a promise to purchase that makes some sense. But like, don't come to me with a 2 year out of date rent roll that I don't even know how you got a hold of. And then tell me that this is a deal that I'm supposed to make an offer on without even knowing what the existing today's financial metrics are. So, you know, this was a deal that ended up not closing, where, you know, it was a frustrating 2 days of having conversations with what I consider to be a fairly unprofessional agent, but that this can be the kind of thing that happens when you're, you know, dealing with bird dogs. Now, that was kind of like, you know, maybe a less fruitful transaction that didn't come to pass. But if I flip back to some of the deals where like we actually did have promises to purchase, in all of those cases, there were intermediary brokers. And then I had to build into my financial fee structure the fact that like, if you think you're saving, you actually have to kick the broker their 2%. Then you have to kick the bird dog their 2%. So you're actually paying a 4% transaction fee that like you would be paying anyway if you were transacting on Centris. So trust me, everybody in the deal is getting their pound of flesh. And if you're trying to create a deal like this with a bird dog that makes some sense, you do need to be sure that you run the numbers and run everything, taking into account the fact that there are going to be those additional percentages added to whatever deal it is that you're doing. So, you know, hopefully with this little explanation, I have demystified for you a little bit what a bird dog is, how they operate. Also that, you know, they can be a way to source deal flow, but expect additional complications and don't expect to have the deal of the century. Like in a sense, this is just a way to increase your footprint and to be able to look at more deals than you would if you were working strictly on market. So now perhaps the last piece of this is like, where do you find bird dogs? Like, how do you form relationships with these people? And so, you know, the bird dogs that I have met have all been through investor networking events. And so at the Equity Builders Club monthly networking events, we do sometimes have bird dogs who show up. And, you know, we're not the only real estate networking association that hosts events in our market in Montreal. And so pretty much any real estate investor event or training or anything that is meant to attract real estate investors will, of course, also attract bird dogs in the same way that it attracts private lenders, real estate brokers, mortgage brokers, all of the people who hope to service investors. And because bird dogs are really like kind of a, you know, high trust role, because since they don't sign a contract with you, they have to have confidence that you as the investor are serious, that you're going to close and that you're going to pay them. So, you know, they're going to want to encrust themselves, like to really work their way into networks to understand, okay, who are the active investors? Who are the active investors that I'm going to want to deal with, who are going to pay me and who are going to be able to close? And ultimately, that's how the bird dogs end up making money. So expect to meet them at real estate networking events. And they're not going to come up to you and be like, oh, hey, I'm a bird dog. They're going to come up to you and say, oh, once in a while, I get off-market deals. I work with investors to help them put deals together. And then as you start scratching and begin to understand what is their role and how does their fee structure work, you're going to be able to like flag them in your mind and be like, oh, either this is a wholesaler, this is a broker who has off-market deals, or this is a bird dog who I can give my buy box to. And they're then going to go out to their network and try to bring me deals that are going to be of interest to me. So real estate fan, I hope that that has demystified this weird little corner of the real estate world for you so that you can seem less ignorant when you go to networking events and talk to other investors, so that when you meet a bird dog, you're able to identify them in your mind. And that if you are looking to extend your buying footprint to look at more deals, have access to more deals, this can become an additional way of sourcing deal flow in a competitive market where you might not have the financial edge because you are going to have to pay those transaction fees in the same way as you would on Centris, but it might allow you to have a one-on-one conversation with a seller and not be transacting with there is the pressure of having 10 other offers on something that looks like it might be interesting. So real estate fan, if you found this constructive, if you think that there's somebody who should learn from it, please go ahead and share this episode. And I would love to see you next week at the Equity Builders Club networking event, June 17th, with the topic of scaling your real estate portfolio in this competitive market and being able to find more deals than you can close on. So please join me next week in person. And if not, tune in next week for the next episode of the Real Escape Investing Podcast.
The second exciting thing is that we still have a few more coaching spots available in our next cohort. If you would like to have a little bit more help closing on that next property, please go ahead and fill out the contact form on equitybuildersclub.com and we would be happy to jump on a call and explain to you a little bit more about what we do.
Thank you for listening to the Real Escape Investing Podcast. I'm your host, Terry Schauer. If you find that this show has been useful to you, if you've enjoyed the content, if it's done anything to move the needle for you, please go ahead and share it with one person who you think could profit from listening to it. Until next time, real estate fans.